You've given a lot of thought to this relationship, and what conclusions have you reached?
You've all noticed that to come from Pakistan as well as from the U.S.
So it's a crucial question to what extent Pakistan's inter-service intelligence influences the actions of radical Islamists in Afghanistan. You've given a lot of thought to this relationship, and what conclusions have you reached?
You've all noticed that that very delicate. I'll answer it in dealing with the kidnapping. That in the last week there's been a case of the stories of the CIA tracking the Boyle Coleman family. Jason Boyle, Canadian, Caitlin Coleman, American, what we thought were two children, three children, maybe four. One didn't survive. And that the CIA, after 5 years, provided intelligence to the Pakistani army, which swooped in a rescue attempt and killed all the captors and freed the hostages, and they are home. Everybody breathes a sigh of relief. We're all happy, truly, clearly, enormously happy that they are out and they're alive and they're back. And in 2017, I had two meetings at the National Security Council in the White House, and before I went to see the Akhanis, and again to see the Akhanis. And I was advised not to go because they were afraid that something would happen to me. And as they must say, but the head of all the people I met was the only one who didn't say that. All she said was, be safe. In other words, there was no indication that I could not go. The Akhani Network is a terrorist organization, so designated by the Department of Treasury. Therefore, it's illegal for a United States representative, a diplomat, to negotiate or to talk or to meet with a terrorist organization. We're not supposed to do it. You cannot do that under U.S. law. Now, when I, to step back, when in 2015, after our meeting in the White House, a man involved in my kidnapping, who's a British intelligence agent, called me, said he's coming to the U.S., and could he meet me in Penn Station in New York? And he wanted to meet my friend David Rode also. David was up in New England, where he's from, with his family. So I went, and we were meeting, and I looked over and I saw two Pakistanis come in this cafe. And I said, wait, those are the two men who provided the first visa that I was ever given by Pakistan to go back to, and where I saw the Akhanis. What are they doing here? And he said, oh, they're friends of mine. I said, oh, okay. And so we all talked. And then he said, I understand that you have met with the Akhanis. I said, yes. And I said, they told me they only trusted me. And I don't know quite what to do about that. And he acknowledged that. And I thought, I don't think I'm ever going to be allowed back into Pakistan after this meeting. And so November came, and I was in it, went and keeping the government informed of my involvement, because what I've been trying to do since the book that I have written was not one I intended to write. I wanted to go back and resolve things And I do want to talk to you a bit about that. So this is sort of a subparagraph, but I don't want to lose track of the main story. When I went back, and when it was made clear that I could see the Akhanis, I had another contract through the Council on Foreign Relations to trace all the various networks that emanate from Pakistan and Yemen and Saudi Arabia with ISIS, because I am in this unique position because of my age and background, and I'm not married and I don't have children, and I still go out and do this with those men who were our allies, who are today our enemies, whether they're in Yemen, whether they're in Egypt, or whether they're in Pakistan. And that's what I was doing. And I went back to Pakistan. I went back after Stephen Sotloff was murdered. I secretly went back to Afghanistan, frightened that as soon as I entered the country and went to the airport, that my name was on a list, because the jailer said, we're not going to let the bird out of the cage a second time. And that, you know, and the Taliban just don't wear beards and black turbans. They're clean shaven and they're everywhere. Very sophisticated operation. And I went to see my friend who I thought was, that I had, because of my relationship to him, and that I had been kidnapped. And we sat in a hotel and I told him the whole story, and he said, no. And he said, it's this. And he told me it's 180 degrees different. And my advice to you is to leave very soon, because what you are involved in here is something much greater than yourself, and it's far too dangerous, and you must leave. So the next day, I went to see the former head of the NDS, which is the combination CIA-FBI, retired. And I told him my story a bit. And he looked at me and he said, this is an Afghan talking to an American. And he said, have you seen the movie 12 Years a Slave? I said, I don't know what that is. I've been in the Middle East for the last year and a quarter studying this on a project. He said, well, you're that man. Everybody who you think was your friend was your enemy. And we're talking not just about Afghans. And so that is what set me on this very long, dark, murky journey, this labyrinth from which I will never reemerge fully, out of which came this book. Then I have, as I was finishing that, because I met with the Akhanis, because this opportunity opened up to me, and they began to ask me, or talk to me, if you will, first, about how angry they were under certain elements of the Bull-Bergdahl exchange. And I didn't quite understand what they were talking about, and I took this information back to Washington. This is not a journalism story. This is far bigger than that. I'm simply a pawn here being used. And I realized that this was something much greater, and that I had a role to play, perhaps, to help others. And I'm thinking of, this opportunity came, and I explained it to everybody. And this is after which I met with this man from this former British intelligence agent. And I thought that for some reason Pakistan got wind of this; they weren't going to allow me to come back. And I told everybody this, or in this group of counterterrorism people in the National Security Council. And a member from the State Department said, "No, Jerry, we think they'd welcome a visa application from you." In Pakistan. Then I met later separately with a member of what's called a fusion cell, two members of what's called the fusion cell, which is sort of a bureaucratic SWAT team that President Obama and his administration set up to deal with kidnappings set up after the deaths of the ISIS people. You read about this, and this was in June 2015 when we all met with the president on this. And he created this fusion cell, which is to bring the CIA and the FBI and the Department of Defense and the State Department and everybody together, a representative, to try and use all the various, we'll call them tribal entities in Washington, together to work for the betterment of and to find ways to release Americans being held hostage, political representatives, people being held hostage around the world. And so I told the same story to the FBI agent. He said, no, Jerry, we think the Pakistanis would welcome a visa application from you. There's no way in the world that I could be allowed to go back to Pakistan to meet with the Akhanis and meet with them as I do without. And the last time I was told I would be vetted by the Pakistani ambassador to the UN, which I was, that I could do this without the complete and total approval of the ISI.
So
there's no way that I could come close to the Akanis without them. That's my long-winded way of answering your question.
So Joshua Boyle and his family, they were taken by the Haqqani Network and held by the Haqqani Network. Mm-hmm. So what's your take on their story? And was this a political or a commercial kidnapping?
Good question. All right, I'm going to tell you what I
know. We don't know very much, but you know.
I know a little bit more. I don't know a lot on this, but I know a little bit. I'm going to tell you what I know, and I'll let you decide what you think on this. What we know publicly is that Joshua Boyle, Canadian, married to he has a controversial, a very awkward background, in that he was married to the sister of a man named Omar Khadr, who was in Guantanamo for having killed an American, two Americans, I believe. And his sister is very outspoken, and there's nothing wrong with that on behalf of her brother. But I read somewhere that there was a tie. Bin Laden somehow was involved here. So, and I asked myself, what in the world, when I heard about this, is a man taking a pregnant woman into Afghanistan? There's no journalist in Kabul who would dare go out into the country by themselves without Afghan guides, and to go to a village where you're completely protected, to go to Wardak province, where the Taliban are everywhere, is, to me, incomprehensible. And
well, didn't he describe himself as a pilgrim?
Yes, but there's another man, well, there have been others who've tried that, and, well, they're not around. It's even if you're a pilgrim, you're also a commodity, and you also are a commodity, meaning something to sell. I found it very strange and maybe it's all that he was a pilgrim and he saw himself this way and his wife was this way and they went together, but I thought it was awkward and I thought it was strange. I still do, a bit. But they wanted to do that. And so they were held captive, and we've seen the videos in this for 5 years. And no one seemed to know where they were. And then President Trump, more than any other president, in his speech announcing his Afghan policy, really criticized publicly Pakistan and did not mince words about its ties to terrorist groups and backing terrorist groups. And we've been very diplomatic in what our statements about that over the years. Full court press on this. That it's interesting that within, and this was in September, that within a month, that Pakistan now, which has received $12.5 billion since 9/11, and it's been allied with the United States in the Cold War since 1954, would want to lose this relationship, even though Pakistan and China are extremely close now, that it would want to lose this tie to the United States. And so it's not unreasonable to think that perhaps, and it's interesting that the CIA, within a few weeks of this, would finally, well, unable to do it for 5 years, find the Boyle Colemans and then provide this information to the ISI, with which it was very closely allied during the 1980s and 1990s. And one thing that bothered me about working on Charlie Wilson's War was that the director had asked me, because I complained, we were shooting this, I was simply the low guy on the side, but I said, you know, we're in Morocco shooting this movie. These mountains are not like Afghanistan. Afghanistan has these magnificent mountains. And so I finally convinced her to do something. And she said, all right, go back, find a helicopter and a camera crew and that, and go up and take people up into the air and shoot footage, and maybe we can do something. And so I went back and I found people to do this. And I got a phone call from the CIA advisor on the movie. He said, no, don't do any more. I've convinced the director that I can do it. And I'm going to my friends in the Pakistani army, and we'll get a helicopter and go up and do it. And I said to myself, he's been out of the CIA for 20 years. He's going to call his friends in the Pakistani army, and they're going to take a helicopter up over Afghanistan, where the United States controls all the airspace. And he's that close with them that they can just call him up and go in and shoot this footage. My goodness. See, this tie that I thought that might have ended with him in the Pakistani army 20 years later is certainly very strong. So that is my way of saying perhaps their links are still there. And so to bring this back, what the Akhanis had said to me was, and they could certainly be using me, 100%, that they wanted the Coleman family to be able to see, allow the parents to see their grandchildren, and they would allow me to bring them over to see them. But I would have to bring a letter from the U.S. government, which means something official. And that within the last 3 weeks, that was what we're trying to do. So it's difficult for me to believe entirely that the Akhanis would allow any of their men to kill a girl. Because you cannot think about this. Children being born in a baked mud hut, in a compound, in the tribal areas or on the Afghan border, could not do this alone. They have to do this with mothers, with women, there to nurture those children and to provide whatever needs to be provided, and a bond develops between them. I just find it difficult to believe that one child was murdered. Was she raped? This is a terrible thing to even contemplate. But I am confused as to exactly what really happened based upon the information that I know and what I've been involved in on my own is so complex. It's so murky, just like the whole entire world of political kidnapping, to think that the Akhanis would try to, because they were concerned about the welfare of their children, bring the grandparents over to see them, and that they would be, according to the U.S. and tribal area of Kurram, which is along the Afghan-Pakistani border, primarily Shia area, but there are some Pashtun Sunnis there. Shia Sunni is like Catholic and Protestant in Islam. And that the CIA could do all of this. It's very, very murky. And that's my only way to answer your question. But the Pakistani army and the Akhanis have been together since the 1970s, and they certainly will continue to be. And the role of the United States remains to me extremely murky also.
So what can I say? Journalism is a risky business, and your stories and the risk